Welcome to the Meal Mentor Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay S. Nixon. This is the 40th episode in the co-pilot series. 40, I can't believe it's almost been a full year. Anyway, this is our place where we chat about making the plant-based lifestyle more doable, especially while facing the common challenges and roadblocks we all face on our journey to health and weight loss and just becoming plant-based and vegan and all that good stuff. I'm so excited for my guest today. I get to have doctors on all the time, and it's always just fun to have medical professionals and hear their sort of opinions and experiences in and outside of the community and why they went vegan. And so I'm really excited to have him. And I wish you guys could see where he's right now. He's talking to me live from Colorado with the most gorgeous background ever. I'm so jealous. So, but maybe he can bring that out in his words. But without any more rambling, welcome Dr. Borders.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, I'm thrilled. So why don't you tell us, well, first tell us what kind of doctor you are and what you do, and maybe you can give us a background of how you became vegan and sort of what brought you to that path.
Sure, I'll try to make that as simple as possible.
Like long and complicated, it's cool.
Well, my profession is I'm a neuroradiologist, which is an MD. So I went through medical training and then went through 5 years of residency in radiology. I went through a year in fellowship of neuroradiology. And now I practice in Tucson, Arizona with a private group covering two hospitals in Tucson. I'm about almost 9 years vegan now, maybe 8.5 years vegan. My quest started, I guess, early on in a tragic turn of events. I lost my father when I was 5 years old, and he had died of a heart attack at the age of 41. And that sort of started my quest on kind of finding a way to be a very healthful person in terms of health and trying to understand what the different avenues for not having that happen to me would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear
so
that.
You know, as a result, I think that I went through engineering school at first and then became an engineer and then went to medical school. And throughout that quest, I kind of learned a lot about disease and disease processes and didn't really learn too much about health. But by default, I guess, sort of by my programming, I thought, well, the reverse of a disease. Also, if I can learn about disease, I can learn about health. And, mm-hmm. and that sort of came to it just took me different pathways, and ultimately what turned me from, I guess, a vegetarian lifestyle to vegan was, I think, probably the seminal episode, the China study with Dr. Colin Campbell wrote, and his son wrote the China study, and that kind of turned the scientific reasoning to be a very compelling reasoning. And so I did that, and then throughout my journey, I've brought to a greater understanding of the compassion behind it, as well as the conservation and environment and rainforest and water usage, and obviously with animal agriculture being a horrific mm-hmm. thing. So I practice medicine, and I've learned quite a lot through different books and courses and interviews and self-learning that I think a whole food plant-based diet is the best diet, not only for one's human body but for the planet. And it really isn't a diet, it's more of a lifestyle. I mean, for me, I think is more of a colorful word. I think brings more spectrum mm-hmm. to what it represents. So that's kind of where I am today. It's a long answer.
No, I love it. And I really love that you said, there's two things you said right there at the end, that you felt it's more of a lifestyle than a diet. And I agree with you completely. But what I love too is that this started for you as predominantly a health thing. You know, you were obviously intrigued by the science aspects, being an engineer and having gone to medical school. But then you said, you know, over time, I also became aware of the compassionate reasons and the ecological reasons. And that's something I see all the time with people, is they may come for one reason or another, but eventually the whole big picture comes before them.
Yes, I completely agree with that. And there's so many facets to the entrance into this lifestyle that once you kind of enter into the door, you just see so many other reasons, and it just sort of is self-supporting itself. That's why I call it a lifestyle. It kind of connects everything.
Absolutely. And since you have an engineering background, which is really fascinating to me that, you know, you have this very science-based engineering background and then also this very science-based biological background from your study of medicine. So with the, it's just such a really cool perspective to have both of those trainings and educations. So what kind of, like, what, how do you feel or respond to sort of the engineering side of medicine with like all this pharmaceutical and all this new technology? I mean, on one hand to you, it must be extremely fascinating, but I also know a lot of doctors, especially those who advocate a whole food plant-based diet, are also kind of frustrated that so many doctors are encouraged, if you know, with payments or lavish vacations, to prescribe pills instead of peas. So I would love to hear kind of your opinion on all of this technology and pharmaceutical stuff that's going on.
Well, again, I think it goes down to there's a lot of different, obviously, self-interests into promoting pharmaceuticals, but I think it goes down to the whole idea of perhaps as science being more of a reductionistic view of, mm-hmm. of who we are and where we came from, and as a result, through that reductionism, the science-based method is more of a okay. Well, this is broken. Let's find a way to fix it, rather than from, I think, a holistic point of view, look at the whole organism and use it as health and prevention as being the primary reason to support the organism, rather than to try to repair damage done, taking it further and further into a sickness. And it's sort of a generalized description, but I think it, you know, with the current medical system, the way it's set up is, you know, pharmaceutical companies that are developing drugs and developing tools to work, I think, at least from my perspective, like endovascular tools where you take a catheter and you snake a tiny catheter to the size of a hair into a brain artery and try to coil an aneurysm. I mean, they're trying to fix things that could be, you know, on the short end of the cycle, fixed through prevention. And So I think there's a balance. I guess what I'm saying is that there should, I think, be a balance. Obviously, there should be some high technological tools to be able to help people. But I think, unfortunately, most of the interest is in that, I think, and probably because of the financial repercussions of that. Going a whole food plant-based is a wonderful thing, but it's very hard for medical corporations to determine how to turn a profit with that. And that's a tough thing. I think one hope, glimmer of hope, is through insurance companies that are interested in decreasing premiums. I think through companies, they realize that through these statistical studies of diet and lifestyle and how it does really decrease disease and increases the insurance company's bottom line, because the premiums keep coming in for more and more people, the healthier they are, and the less they have to pay out. I think that is a way to at least look towards that, kind of like the model of, the model of cigarette smoking with R.J. Reynolds. I mean, people still remember a cigarette tastes good. Winston tastes good like a cigarette should. It's just these patterns that have been set up. So for corporations, for marketing, have to be broken. And I think there are other people on the other side that can make money, insurance companies, that could be utilized as leverage. But I kind of don't. Probably I'm going down a digression.
No, that's actually a really great point. And I've definitely started seeing that with our members, a lot of them, if they reach a certain body mass index or their cholesterol is a certain number, they will not pay as much for their health insurance. And that's obviously something that's very attractive to a lot of people because health insurance premiums can be exceptionally expensive for a family. And I've also seen, too, now a lot of places of employment will either pay for your gym membership. If you go, you know, you have to go so many times a month and they'll pay for it. Or if you have, maybe you don't meet the health standards, they will pay for a gym membership. So it seems like you're right that sort of maybe it will be the insurance companies or the employers that are paying for the insurance that might change things around a little bit. One thing that I find really interesting, again, because you have such a, it's not often you, I get to meet doctors that are also engineers, is that you picked a field that is very much focused on equipment and, you know, sort of these scientific advancements. And so you sort of gave a brief sort of overview of the kind of work you did. But if someone isn't familiar, radiology is, you know, like MRIs and CT scans and magnetic, you know, imaging. Is your background in engineering, was that why you chose this particular area of medicine to practice?
You know, I think being an engineer, I enjoyed math and science, which kind of led me into engineering, and I enjoyed problem solving. I think radiology is kind of a field that combines a lot of mathematics and physics with medicine, and I found that appealing, and a lot of it can involve computers and computer science. But it's a really neat field. I'm glad I chose it. I will say that it has let me see a lot of disease processes at the microscopic level, or at least cellular level, where I look at arteries and arterioles and even capillary beds. You know, we're talking a few microns in size. And what is interesting is that a whole food plant-based diet is the only lifestyle that will reverse that small vessel disease. And one thing as a radiologist is you can kind of tie it together. Most disease processes begin in the body with decreasing oxygen to the organs, everything from the brain to the liver, to the lungs, and a lot of that starts and begins at the capillary level, where these diseases that that are caused basically by an animal-based diet start. It's an amazing thing to see that. And I'll see 40-year-old people with 90-year-old brain should look like, or I'll look at, I see kids that are starting to get vascular atherosclerotic disease. It is an epidemic in our society now that, I feel like we as people and citizens, as physicians, as any kind of profession, have a duty to really educate ourselves and those around us, at least what's going on, I think. So I'm happy to participate in things like this.
One thing I say quite often is that, you know, healthy comes in all shapes and sizes. And so you could see someone who on the outside looks very young, looks good, you know, sexy, trim, but you have no idea what their insides look like. And you're actually saying this. You see this. You actually see their insides and are surprised by how bad it can look, even though they on the outside probably look okay.
Yeah. I think that it's pretty amazing. I mean, you think about our interactions with the environment, and we have our skin, which is about 2 square meters, which interacts with the environment. So, but things can obviously, poisons can get into our skin, and you can spill something on your skin, it can be absorbed very quickly. But our environment surface area is about 2 square meters with the skin, and with our lungs, it's about 20 square meters, about the size of a tennis court. You know, people obviously that smoke have that kind of exposure, and that can get into the lungs, and it's quite a surface area. But when you think about it, our gut has over 300 square meters of interaction with the environment directly, everything we ingest into our mouth, and then obviously goes out into the toilet, but hopefully in the toilet. you know, that's 300 square meters of interaction with toxins that can sit in our gut for a very long time. There's just so many different facets of medicine that support a whole food plant-based diet. And, you know, I guess the point with the gut is that if people are not eating that and eat animal parts and secretions, which I view, and a lot of other scientists view, obviously, that they are carcinogens, as well as bodies of people, or not people, but bodies of animals. So you can expose yourself to that for very, very long time, ingesting that, and take 2-3 days, and your whole system's absorbing those toxins. It's just sort of another divergence I take. Sorry, yeah. Lindsay.
No, actually, I really appreciate that, because that is something that comes up a lot. A lot of people who reach out to me are having sort of digestion problems, whether they can't go or they go too much. But most often it is they can't go. And it's fascinating to me how long animal products will just sit there and rot in your stomach. And it had never, and I knew that. I knew they just didn't move out and they couldn't poop, but it never occurred to me until you just said it, that whole time it's sitting there, it's like just, you know, like a cesspool. It's just like sending all this environmental toxic stuff just going round and round. It's like recirculated air in the worst way.
Yeah. Through the blood, into your liver, through your heart.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's just like, it just keeps spread the poison around.
And things, I mean, it's not surprising when you hear, you know, obviously in the past 50 years, I mean, clearly colorectal cancer is, you know, there's a direct causation from eating meat to colorectal cancer. And I mean, it all makes sort of a teleological sense when you kind of look at it from a holistic perspective rather than a reductionistic perspective. But I think things, at least from a scientific perspective, are very clear. Hopefully that in, if, you know, if they're interested in reading about it, the China study is a great book to start with. If you're interested in medical literature.
And his follow-up book, Whole, talks a lot about this reductionism that you're speaking about, which is also quite amazing. And I loved that book as well.
Yeah, those are two great books. But like you said, Lindsay, there are a lot of other different perspectives to come from. Mm-hmm. If people are coming from it from a compassionate basis, I would highly recommend Will Tuttle's book, The World Peace Diet.
Yes, that's a great book, too.
One of the, his thesis, I think, is I wholeheartedly agree with, and I just like his whole perspective on how he talks about it. But there are a lot of different ways. I think what you're doing, Lindsay, is one of the most beneficial ways.
Thank you.
It is hard when you go from one diet to another, or you go from one lifestyle to another. One of the most difficult things is, well, how do I do this? What's the instruction like? How do I make a meal without these body parts?
And yeah.
How can I stop eating cheese? You know, and you just do. And it's people do and they provide these doorways that people can step through and really realistically do it, even though they may learn about it and think it's wrong. But I think the catalyst is being able to do it. So I highly recommend you and people like you that are doing this. I think it's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. It is. That was my big thing. And I see that all the time. I want to do this. I absolutely believe what you're saying. I want to do it. How do I do it? You know, it's like they know they want to do it, but they just don't know how to actually implement and incorporate it in your life. And one thing I always tell people is, you know, just make some progress every day. You know, you're going to have a mess up or slip up, or you're going to get confused. For the longest time, I did not realize that things that said non-dairy could still actually contain dairy in them. It's just all these little things you have to learn, but you know, like anything, it's just practice and consistency.
Yeah And it helps to have people around you that also do it. And you know, what's the compassion that you're doing it for? Was it, you know, I like one of the things I've read about it is it's a thoughtful way of eating. And when you really, you have to think about what you're eating every meal.
And yeah, you're not like plainly, your head's not in the stand, just like shoveling whatever in your mouth. I actually think that's the greatest gift being, you know, plant-based and vegan has given to me is what you're saying now, that having that conscious thought. Because before I was like, I treated my body, this wonderful thing, as like a garbage disposal.
Yeah, yeah.
It's time for people
to stop treating their bodies like graveyards.
Yes.
And treat them like temples.
That was one of the things when I first went vegan. I went to like a vegan fest, like a veg fest kind of thing. And I saw this shirt and it said vegan, period, because my body isn't a graveyard. And I was like, oh my God, you know, like it was like such a shocking, eye-opening, but truthful thing. That will always stay with me forever. When I realized that, I was like, oh, I was just walking around with other bodies inside my body.
Yeah.
So it was a really shocking thing for me, but it's something I've always kind of kept to since. But I guess sort of going back to what you do, so you get to see a lot of really cool things. You see brains on, like you said, very cellular levels. Have you been able to see anyone who maybe did make a lifestyle change, see improvements in like future scans and imaging?
You know, I practice neuroradiology, but I also practice general radiology. And as a result, I do see patients with diseases or pathology that they're mm-hmm. trying to figure out. And I will almost always, if the opportunity comes up and they ask, and I feel it's pertinent, I will introduce the idea of a whole food plant-based diet.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed people have had positive results anecdotally, but I have never specifically followed, let's say, arterial lesions like Dr. Esselstein
mm-hmm.
at the Cleveland Clinic. And he has demonstrated through his book and articles that those coronary artery plaques are reversible indeed with a whole food plant-based diet. Is it reversible? Not just stopping, but reversible.
Right.
It's the only known thing that does it. And so it is, I don't have the opportunity to work a research center like that where I can get the funding mm-hmm. to follow up kids and people with double blind trials and stuff like that. But definitely anecdotally, people seem to respond. And those that don't, you know, just aren't ready. And those that do, most people at least will lend an ear. And if they're truly interested even more, I'll give them even more information. But I'm pretty honest. And the nice thing about it is I don't have to feel like I'm doing anything wrong at all, because it's all supported scientifically. It mm-hmm. is by far and away the best lifestyle for humans to lead, at least to decrease propensity of disease and prevalence and of all sorts of Western diseases. And so I feel good about saying it. It's I think maybe 10 years ago it was a little bit more hesitant, but it's becoming more and more mainstream and very, very clear, you know. And I think people like Dr. Barnard and other physicians that'll come out and just read the studies, the literature's there. So there's no really anything to fear.
Yeah, right. And I do believe most medical professionals have, you know, they really do care about their patients, but there is something to be said for still educating yourself and being your own, you know, health advocate, if for no other reason that you can better interact with your doctor.
Yeah, agree.
So earlier when we were talking before the podcast, you had mentioned PCRM. I love Dr. Barnard. I love PCRM, which is Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Have you been involved with them in any way?
You know, my wife is also a physician. She's a mammographer, also vegan. And we have a vegan, what we call a pure blood, a child. My wife and I have been involved with PCRM for a long time. We went to some fundraisers and balls and got involved with at least funding early on, probably 8 years ago, 9 years ago, we got involved. We've always been involved and we just want to be able to provide funding and our help whenever we can with organizations like that.
That's awesome. And so you mentioned your wife was a physician as well. And so, and your child is a pureblood. So your wife was then vegan the whole pregnancy and you're raising your daughter that way?
She's vegan. And Dr. Spock actually wrote the pediatrician's guide. He advocates a vegan diet as well for kids. And it's a real popular book. It's, I think, in its 12th or 13th revision. So it's, it's not, you know, something that is out of mainstream. It's very well advocated and well supported. So, and she's in the 90th percentile of at least height and
weight.
Very happy. Very happy girl.
Yay. Yeah, I am. A lot of women ask that. And I send them actually to PCRM because PCRM has a lot of resources about children and pregnancy. But that's one thing that's always been surprising to me when I hear women who say, oh, my doctor is not supportive because I'm pregnant. And I'm like, I would think that when you're growing another life, you would be encouraging the most amount of fruits and vegetables possible. But I guess sometimes there's a little bit of a quandary over protein. But it always makes me happy to hear women who have beautiful vegan pregnancies.
Yeah, I think, I think you got to remember a lot of all these positions are, they're just people too, and they grew up in families that that advocated what the diet. They couldn't choose their family that they grew up in, and they couldn't choose family couldn't choose them. And as a result, a lot of this is kind of it's hard. You know, there's something about diet or what you're eating. It's almost taboo to sort of reject it. It's easy to say, "Oh, I'm moving on to boxing, or I'm going to running, or I'm going to change my." Exercise routine, but boy, if you change your diet, it's a study on human relationship. It's amazing almost how almost persecuted one feels, and when one changes what they've been growing up on. But I guess my point is that physicians, I think, are put in a situation where if they don't know about something, and I don't think a lot of physicians are taught about health; they're taught about disease. If they don't know about something or are not practicing something themselves, it's very difficult for them to switch frames of mind. Not only, I think, as a person, as we've all known friends and things that have had difficulties, myself included, first. but the fact that they're actually giving medical advice to a patient that could come back to them through the unfortunate legal system of our medical legal system. A lot of it may just simply be for just not knowing and just trying to cover themselves, even though the data would support otherwise completely. They just don't know the data, and therefore it's very difficult, I think, for a lot of people to recommend something they don't know about. And that, I think, is common in medicine. And it is unfortunate, but what's good is that the direction is moving the right way, and a lot more physicians are educating themselves, and through programs like this and other programs out there, it's becoming a lot easier to educate ourselves, not only as physicians, but as citizens and engineers and whatever. So, I encourage people to truly look at a lot of literature out there that you're interested in, and if you are.
Yeah, I don't know if you knew this about me, and most of the meal plan users know, but I was a med mal defense lawyer. I defended doctors from medical malpractice before I had the meal plans, meal mentor, and happy herbivore. And it's always my background of, being a lawyer has always played really interesting into the medicine thing, because I think of that all the times about doctors. If they were to prescribe peas instead of pills, like what kind of lawsuit could stem from that? But at the same time, I have worked with probably 100 people at this point that their doctor never even suggested diet to them as a way to reverse their condition. And it's like, well, could they be sued? It's a really sort of interesting, I guess it's so messy in a lot of ways, but it's definitely Interesting. So like I had this one person who she was in her 20s and she had had type 2 diabetes for a really long time. Every doctor she went to told her to do low carb, low carb, low carb. She's kept getting sicker, sicker, sicker. She's about to lose one of her legs and her eyesight when just some random friend was like, you should try, you know, being vegan. And, you know, she went off her insulin in 6 weeks and she went on to lose 100 pounds and she's healthy and wonderful now. And it's just like, gosh, you know, I wish there was almost something we could do. Because all these doctors were basically not making her any better.
No, that's a very good point. And I think, obviously anybody can be.
Yeah, it's like,
oh. Anything, but it is, you know, the medical literature is becoming clearer and clearer. And I think we're in a situation most, at least in my recent memory, most comparable to the realization of cigarettes and how bad they were. I can remember ads in the 1960s, seeing ads in the 1960s and 50s, you know, cigarettes are good for the throat. It's, you know, doctors reckon one out of three doctors smoke Camels.
I mean,
this is stuff that was mainstream medicine. And if you went against it, you know, you were not mainstream. And I think it took many, many decades for that to become a realization. And unfortunately, at the deaths of many, many people, and not only many people, many, many animals. And so, unfortunately, that is the best analogy I can come up with. In terms of, and I don't know where in the spectrum we are, but I imagine somewhere, you know, in the very beginning, a couple decades. And I think over time, it's going to become very clear because I think people want the healthiest for their kids. They want to do the best they can for themselves and their families. They want their friends to live long lives. And a lot of it, I just think the information is not out there. There's so much confusion, especially in the health world, not only with medicine, but you've got a whole nutritional marketplace for you know, billions and billions of dollars worth of nutritional vitamins and nutritional mixes and concoctions and potions and lotions. And it's an apothecary, and one's got to really sort through that. And it's not easy. But I think organizations that are professional and kind of are binding, like what PCRM is doing, and there are many more out there. And I think that it's just, I think what you're doing, getting the word out there, is one of the most awesome things out there.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. And I encourage everyone to share the information that they know. And there are many ways you can do it without being like, you know, preachy or stepping it over. And an example was recently, there was this woman in my yoga class that I noticed that she'd had acne and she was always complaining about it and embarrassed by it. And one day I overheard her talking to another person in the class about how she wasn't looking forward to getting this laser treatment on her face. And I'm like, yikes, that sounds so painful. And so I just said, you know, hey, listen, I used to have bad acne and I stopped eating dairy. And I don't know if that'll help you. If you want any more information, here's my email and I'll send you some studies. You know, it was very casual, not really in her face preachy, just let it and put the ball in her court. And sure enough, she came to me, she read it, she informed herself. And not only is she now dairy free and vegetarian, but so are her children and her husband and her mother.
There you go.
And all I had to do is like plant that little seed, spark, like, hey, I think this could help you. Just I didn't mean to eavesdrop, but I overheard you saying this helped me.
Yeah, one person at a time. And it's becoming easier and easier. But yeah, I agree. Another thing also I found is that environment. Most people want to save the environment.
Yes. Or
at least want to be environmentally conscious. You know, countless people are always in recycling and they, you know, they want to do the right thing. I think movies like recently Cowspiracy was just released in on Netflix and redone with, I think, DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, he I think he helped produce sort of a vamped up Cowspiracy on Netflix. You know, those kind of information facts are good to know too. I think if you're vegan or even if you're not vegan, just knowing how much water one one place on a quarter pounder, you know, and
right.
And it takes it down to maybe a not sort of a species level, but it kind of breaks it into quantifications. But sometimes that's good for people to touch base with. And then once they realize, oh, gosh, you know, I'm just wasting 3,000 gallons of water on this meal. And yet here I am trying to preserve a gallon for my shower. This makes no sense, you know. And so I think, you know, those kinds of things are also facets into the way veganism or whole food plant-based diet really affects a lot of what we do other than just us.
Yes. And that's a really great point because, like, I live in California and, like, everyone's driving a Prius because they're all, like, you know, obsessed about it. And I'm like, you know, that burger is like a Hummer on your plate. It doesn't really matter that you're driving a burger or you're driving a Prius.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think, you know, movies like Cowspiracy really bring things to perspective for people that you know, may just need a little bit of nudge, you know. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, you're really interested and you really want to do this for the environment. This is really the most impactful thing one can do individually for the environment as well.
And I think that's one of those benefits. It's a huge benefit, but it's one that, like you said, a lot of people don't know about. They care about it. They want to help the earth. They want to be green, but they just don't realize how much of a positive effect not eating animal products has on the environment.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, to this day, when I see facts, I'm still shocked. I shouldn't be after the facts that I've already seen. But I'm constantly, when these, like you said, like when Cowspiracy, when these documentaries come out, I'm still blown away. And I've been in the movement for a decade and I know, but I still learn more and I'm shocked. Like a few years ago, there was that book, Eating Animals, that I just remember every page. I was like, you know, bending it over because I wanted to remember the fact because there were so many that just shocked me.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Shocking, but it is. But that's like one of the things I love. I tell people it's a win-win-win. It's good for your health. It's good for the animals. It's good for the environment. It's good for all of humanity. It's good for society. Because one thing that people also forget is that the animal industry doesn't just exploit animals. It exploits a lot of humans too, especially illegals who are treated badly and are scared to speak up because they don't want to be deported. And there's a whole lot going on that can be saved by just eating plants.
Yeah, and starvation, human starvation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been clear to me that it wouldn't exist if we were all eating plants. We wouldn't have to give a large food supply to animals for agriculture. We could just feed all our population.
And since it's so funny that you're in Colorado, because that's a famous line by John Denver, you know, Denver, Colorado, even though it's not really related, but I just thought it was kind of funny that you're in Colorado, Denver. Anyway, John Denver famously said, you know, that was why he was motivated to be a vegetarian was because of world hunger. And I've seen a lot of different statistics, but more or less, they all say we could basically cure it overnight if the world was vegetarian, not even vegan, just vegetarian.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty amazing to think about when there's so many starving people, even here in America.
I know. It is amazing.
Well, just to wrap up, there was one thing you said earlier that I wrote down and I loved it so much was that you said doctors aren't taught about health. They're taught about disease. And the reason that really stuck out to me is because I feel like a lot of times we look at health or we define health as an absence of disease. And I feel like that's not good enough. We should be defining health as thriving. And I wanted to sort of get your opinion.
I agree with that. I think it's in medicine, at least, that's what the goal is. The goal is to treat the disease and not worry about the health. Once you get a person to the point where they go out in the hospital, be out on their own, then you're done as far as the traditional medicine roles are. But I think there is, you know, there is an ethics to medicine. I think part of medicine is opening doors for people to learn how they can regain their health and not mm-hmm. just get rid of their disease, but as you say, regain a vibrancy, a lust for life, a feeling of empowerment, all of which I think a whole food plant-based diet, it does give people a feeling, I believe, of empowering themselves, that they're doing the best thing, not only for themselves, but for the planet, for the co-animals and for their children. And I think that I agree with that perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's part of my practice.
I love that you said empower yourself. That's actually something that's come up on a bunch of these, the last couple of episodes here on the podcast, is a number of different people for a number of different reasons and subjects have said that they felt a whole foods plant-based diet allowed you to empower yourself. And so I love that you said that too. And it really is. It's not, you don't have to look at it as like a burden or being different. It's about empowering yourself and having that awareness and, you know, just really doing right by yourself. And I love that you said that.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
Yes. So thank you again so much for coming on the podcast. Is there anything, any last little tidbit or jewel or insight you'd like to throw out here at the end before we wrap up and say our goodbyes?
You know, I just, it is truly the journey to becoming a whole food plant-based is one of the most rewarding experiences that I personally have had in my life. And it continues and grows every day. It's may look difficult from maybe other people's perspective, but once you cross the commitment line and commit yourself to a compassionate, healthy, whole food-based life, I think people will find themselves empowered and enjoyment of their mm-hmm. life to the best that they could ever imagine.
So beautifully said. I couldn't agree more. Well, thank you again so much for coming on to the podcast today. It was a lot of fun, especially having your very cool, very unique engineering and medical background. My best friend's an engineer, and so I really love getting engineer perspectives. So I'm really glad you let me pick your brain on that today. So thank you again so much for coming on. For those who want to learn more about the meal plans and the member community, visit getmealplans.com. And I was your host, Lindsay S. Nixon. And thanks again to Dr. Borders for joining us today.
Thank you, Lindsay. It was my pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.